on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
Whether, you know, law schools are looking at changing the curriculum through Law School 2.0 or looking at their own methods of adding in these kind of innovation-based mindsets, I think at the end of the day, our goal is that everyone going into legal practice or heading into a legal technology route or an innovation route, however they end up working in the wide world of law, they have these innovation mindsets and they understand that to be able to work with these clients who more and more are getting involved in technology and have their own amazing innovation paths ahead of them, they need to have these skills. So again, whether the solution's Law School 2.0 or otherwise, it's really exciting for us to hear that more and more law schools are looking at changing their curriculum and helping to teach these skills. And of course, we love when they approach us.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. We're back with another episode, this time focusing on the topic of empowering the lawyers of tomorrow, today with the founders of the Law School 2.0 initiative, Annabel Pemberton, Nathan Kaur, and Amy Conroy. Welcome to the show to all three of you. I already said this to Amy when she just came online, but you guys weren't here. I'm super excited to have you on the show in the first place, all three of you. And secondly, since we've been trying to do this ever since, I think Law School 2.0 was launched. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, really looking forward. And I think you guys probably have a lot to say. Obviously, was involved in little parts of the legal tech vacation scheme, but I think you probably have a lot more to talk about in terms of how Law School 2.0 has been going and what the experience has been so far. But maybe to kick off the show, I'll hand the mic to you guys for an introduction and maybe telling us more about your professional background and where you started and where you are right now. So I'll start with Annabel.
Great. Thank you again, Hadassah, for having us on your podcast. It's great to be here. Just from my perspective then, my name is Annabel Pemberton. I work as a startup lawyer in a law firm called Sparring, and I actually found my way into law and technology after finding that I had a passion in law and tech when I was doing my Erasmus year, my third year of my undergrad at the University of Warwick, when I was studying at the University of Helsinki in Finland. I was studying things like law and AI, and I found that this was really interesting for me and I wanted to dig deeper into technology. I then actually found my way into legal tech when I was hosting my own podcast, The Wired Wig, and that was when I actually ended up meeting Amy when I was talking to her about open tenancy, and then I was introduced to Nathan. And from there, we went on to actually create Law School 2.0, which you'll be hearing more about today.
Yes, definitely. And I absolutely loved the Wired Wig. That was before I even started my podcast. So it was a real inspiration. I really loved listening to it. Amy, what about you?
Of course. And I'll try and keep this quite brief. But I'm Amy Conroy. I'm currently working as a data scientist at the law firm Mishkondorea in London. But my journey into legal tech and law and technology started when I did my law degree at Bristol University. I did my dissertation on AI and the right to be forgotten. So I was looking at how you can erase data from machine learning algorithms. And that led me to go down the kind of unconventional path of undertaking a master's in computer science, which was a conversion program. I did that for a year, also at Bristol. And as part of that, I did my thesis on creating a system that automatically summarized case judgment. So that kind of tied it back together for me. When I left my master's, I wasn't really interested I wasn't really clear on what I wanted to do or what I was really interested in. So I decided to go down the more customer success route in legal tech, and I worked at a document automation platform for about a year and a half called Avoka as a legal engineer. And that was really great for me. I enjoyed it, learned a lot working with a lot of different law firms and in-house legal teams, but I was really quite keen to get back into coding and back into the tech side. And that has led me to working as a data scientist now at Mishcon.
Super curious to hear your experiences more in a moment. And finally, Nathan.
Hello.
What about you?
Hello, thanks Adessa for having us on. I'm Nathan, I'm the least interesting out of the three of us. I'm currently a trainee solicitor at Adelshaw Goddard. I got into law and technology when I was at the University of Aberdeen in my undergrad, where I co-founded Scotland's first university-affiliated legal tech society. We were running events with a mission similar to Law School 2.0, and it was through one of those events that I met Amy. And then after that event, Catherine Bamford, who is also assisting with the event, suggested that the three of us hop on a call and have a chat, because Sparks would be flying, and Sparks did indeed fly. After the Legal Tech Society, I also worked at Office and Dragons for a bit, and then Brighter for a few years in the business consulting team. So did a little bit of legal tech work before entering the legal profession.
Thank you very much. I definitely wouldn't agree with you saying the least interesting. I don't think any of you are not interesting.
Compared to the girls.
No, I wanted to say it before, but I was like, you know, I'll wait till you finish talking and then come in with it. But no, I definitely don't agree with that. I'm not sure if that's a good way to start the podcast, but... maybe first thing that I'm curious to know from you guys, law school obviously has played a role in each of your lives and professional developments. And I'm curious to hear what your experiences have been, and maybe what some of the lessons learned have been looking back from like where you are right now, and you know, knowing the knowledge that you need to have right now, and the skills that you use on a daily basis. What has your experience with law school been? Maybe starting with Amy.
Yeah, of course. And it's interesting for me because I did my undergrad in law and then master's in computer science. So pivoting to engineering kind of highlighted, I think, a lot of what was lacking that I didn't realize was lacking in my law degree.
Yeah.
So looking back, I think the law degree felt a lot more problem oriented in terms of you're actually breaking down, you know, your problem questions. But really, it was just applying what you had already been taught, and it was a lot of memorization. And I know there was a lot that the minute I walked out of an exam hall, I immediately forgot. Yeah. In terms of the skills, there's definitely those critical thinking skills that were taught, learning how to break down those problems and also the problem solving. But I think my master's in computer science really kind of took those to the next level, because it was a lot more hands-on. And the best thing about doing an engineering degree was it was a lot more collaborative. So working with peers, and actually, you know, when you had a problem, you didn't feel hesitant to express the fact that you weren't understanding something. And again, like actually going into our weekly seminars, it was a lot more clear on where you were, because in computer science, there is a right or wrong answer. So I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed having that kind of step-by-step learning in my engineering degree.
Thank you. That's definitely interesting. So Nathan, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree with Amy on a lot of the points. And kind of reflecting on my time at law school, it very much kind of felt like law school, not lawyer school, which is one of the things we hear from a lot of students we talk to. It was a great program for learning the sort of academic side of law, but when it came to opportunities to learn skills beyond that, it was very much there might be a bit in one class, or here's a small module on it, but we're really going to focus on teaching you things to memorize for an exam or an essay, and then you do that and you get grades, etc. So that's really where the Legal Tech Society came from, was there feels like there's something missing here at university. Can we do something to change that? And you're starting to see other students pick that up as well at different universities. So there's like 6 or 7 Legal Tech Societies around the UK at the moment, which is fantastic from the students. And the law schools are starting to notice that as well. So you're starting to see legal tech courses pop up at different universities, which is fantastic as well. But it still kind of feels like, let's address a content problem, or let's address these matters aren't being taught, so let's try teach them, as opposed to these skills aren't being taught, let's try teach them. So agreeing with Amy in that, if law schools could have more opportunities available to students to learn skills around law that aren't just go and memorize these 20 pages and we'll test you on it, but actually let's get together, let's do something together, have a project together, and you learn more skills that will be useful in your career, regardless of what you go into, whether it's law or legal tech or business or something completely different. More of a focus on skills would be fantastic to see, but seeing how law schools navigate that would be quite interesting.
Thank you. That's definitely interesting. And Annabelle, would you agree with this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with both what Amy and Nathan had said so far. From my perspective, I suppose it was only halfway through my law degree that I really found my area of law that I really enjoyed. In my second year, I was really trying to get into intellectual property, for example. I definitely recognized that I preferred these areas of law, but I was just really struggling to get into these IP open days because you needed a scientific background to do it. And I was starting to think, oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't have studied law because I can't even go into these open days or these experiences with just a straight law degree. And from my perspective, the big change was when I did my Erasmus year, and there was a whole different perspective towards education. And that mindset shift around, I suppose it's also the difference between education in the UK and education in Finland as a whole, that it's not really focused on exams and how well you're doing exams, and you're not competing against each other. But mm-hmm. it was also just the variety of legal areas that were available. So like I mentioned, law and AI, the regulation of the internet, for example, yeah. very specific specialities. And then after that, the choice I made was to go and work for a startup. And in particular there, by having that practical experience within that startup, I started to notice how different lawyers work in comparison to other industries. And I was then able to take that into my final year and approach my studies with that mindset shift. And I think having that approach in my final year, basically stepping off that treadmill that I feel many law students are on of just trying to get into a big city law firm because that's all you think is the yeah. only choice you have, it really gave yeah. me the room to just think about those other possibilities out there. And that was probably why in the end I worked in-house straight away rather than in a larger law firm in private practice. So what I'm trying to say is I feel that education at the moment, in legal education at the moment, especially in the UK, doesn't really give students enough space to think about the other opportunities that, like Amy was saying as well, mm-hmm. and the room to really encourage this mindset shift of the other possibilities that are out there.
Yeah, from my own experience, I would honestly agree with all three of you. Moving to, I guess, law school 2.0, can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly drove you to start up this initiative, what you're trying to do, and how the journey has been so far? Maybe starting with Amy.
Yeah, of course. So law school 2.0 came about because Annabelle approached me really to have a conversation about how both of us had ended up in this world without really intending to end up within legal tech. And I think that's the common denominator between all three of us, is that we have accidentally stumbled into this world rather than seeing that as a path that was available to us. And a key thing of that was the fact that there was no practical experiences available for law students. So I went out and created my own with Open Tenancy, which was something I ran for about a year and a half, where we were just trying to look at how can we create a platform that makes tenancy rights more accessible for your average user. So that was a legal tech platform at its core, but it was a problem that I'd identified, that myself and my co-founder Anna had identified, that we wanted to help solve in this way. Mm-hmm. And I think once we brought Nathan into it and the three of us started talking about what Law School 2.0 at the time could be, without realizing that it was Law School 2.0 then, we realized when you take this problem of law students having no practical experiences to end up in this kind of legal tech world or to be innovative lawyers and have that innovative mindset, what it drills down to is that there is a gap in the education, whether that's something that needs to be solved by law schools or not. We were like, once you keep breaking that problem down and down and down, it really is that they don't know what they're doing. If you ask a normal or a law student today what legal tech is, most of them probably still think it's, you know, that we're creating AI to take over the role of a lawyer. They don't realize that there's more than just legal tech, there's legal innovation, and they can actually really leverage that to provide a better service at the end of it to their client. So long story short, we really just wanted to create a community that people could come to mm-hmm. learn about legal innovation, to learn about legal tech, and to provide them with those practical experiences to gain those skills that we talked about earlier that we felt was missing in our own education.
Very, very interesting. And Annabelle, we were just talking about, obviously, the practical skill sets that we don't learn in traditional legal education. What was it like to start up this initiative?
Sure, of course. And actually, before I just get to that point, I know previously with Helsinki, I said there maybe weren't so many practical opportunities, but I just realized afterwards that when I was there, I also noticed that they had something called the Legal Tech Lab. And that was actually the first time I'd ever heard of legal tech and having this space where they would have conferences and projects and really actively working on. It's very hard to look back on that time because I really did not understand what legal tech was. When I started the Wired Wig, I was using law and tech and legal tech interchangeably. So, you know, like I really just didn't understand like what it meant. So I probably didn't engage with that opportunity as much as I should have. But it just seemed so exciting that you could basically play around with law in the same way you could as a science. And you could see that in the education in Finland, that people were then going into legal roles with more of an innovative mindset, that they weren't just, you know, going down one path. You could really carve your own path. So if you haven't heard of it before, then check out the Legal Tech Lab from the University of Helsinki, because it's been one of these initiatives that has been running for quite some time. And I feel that maybe that was something that inspired me, perhaps indirectly and in the background, but I just thought I'd mention that. But in terms of actually building Law School 2.0, we are a registered company now. It was really... So from my perspective, I had already worked in a startup that had gone from being only 100 odd people to 300 and then back down to 100 and then built up again and then was acquired. So I had seen that growth going from no processes to some processes to passing audits, etc. So I had a bit of experience from that perspective, from the compliance and data protection perspective, but also from the business side. So I think that helped us a bit with actually growing things. But in terms of actually building a business, touch wood while I say this, but I feel that some people overcomplicate it quite a lot and get a bit too scared about just starting. In practice, when we were building Law School 2.0, like Amy said, we just wanted to create this community and run something for students and existing lawyers and graduates that they could really use for their benefit in knowing how to use technology correctly in practice. And this started with the scheme that we will explain a bit more about. But when we were actually pulling that together, we never even thought about the fact that we would a year later become a company. We just wanted to put on this scheme and see how we could help others rather than just replying to LinkedIn messages, because we just felt that we could do more. Yeah. So I suppose in answering your question in how hard and how difficult it was to actually build the company, it wasn't that tricky, and it came quite naturally in the end. Of course, we have other things that we need to think about now, like finances and accounting and all of these kind of more businessy things, but they just come as they come along, and then you just acquire the skills as you need them. So I would say for any entrepreneur who wants to start a business and is scared about these more grown-up business things, then just go for it, because as when you get to those things, then you'll learn how to do them as they come to you.
Amy?
I think one thing to quickly add is that the hardest thing for us was definitely keeping ourselves grounded. Like if Annabelle, Nathan, and I had our way, we would sit on a call every week and just like daydream about the most amazing world that we could create. But at some point we had to like scale it down and be like, we actually want to build this scheme. And that's not in a bad way. It's that we have amazing ideas, but it's only like the three of us. So I'm really impressed with what we were able to pull off, the three of us. And I feel like Annabelle's about to jump in and say, no, that's absolutely wrong.
if I may just say, I feel like we're also quite practical in figuring out what is the top priority in moving forward. We do have a lot of ideas, and I would say all of us have a visionary spirit inside of us, which is also quite unusual with three co-founders. Normally you have someone who's like very finance focused, someone who's very tech focused, and someone who's more of a CEO position and a bit more of a visionary. But I think with the three of us, all of us really have like big dreams for Law School 2.0 and where it can go and the future of legal education. And that's great. And sometimes that means, like Amy said, we do get really aspirational about what we could build, but then we have the business savvy to think about what is the priority and what we can actually do.
Yeah, well. I think my point is more that we really are just a team of three right now. And if we were a full-blown organization with 100 people, there's so many things that we'd want to do and want to be able to do. But yeah, I'm very impressed, and well done to the three of us.
Yeah, honestly, well done to the three of you. It's incredible. You've been able to, this, I mean, Law School 2.0 has been running since, what is, 2021, I want to say? And like, it's vibrant and active, and it's incredible, even through the COVID period. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive how you guys did all of this. And also, I think that the fact that you guys are so motivated and are able to dream about these big things, even though maybe it won't all be turned into concrete steps now or in the near future, that maybe is also something that is driving you and makes the process of building this company easier. Rather than starting from scratch, starting something that you might not even be super passionate about, but you see potential in it. So I think that perhaps also plays a role. Nathan, do you want to maybe tell us a little bit more about what activities Law School 2.0 is organizing? And obviously, the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme, Annabelle just also mentioned it. Can you tell us a little bit more about everything that Law School 2.0 offers and that also in particular?
Yeah, of course. So the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme that just happened from the point of recording this a few weeks ago is a sort of main flagship event that we'll do currently once a year in the summer. And that kind of came from thinking that students and people looking to get more experience in the legal industry or kind of get involved will try and do vacation schemes at different law firms, get a bit of experience, meet people in the firm, see what it's actually like. And it was one of those days where like, oh, wouldn't it be fantastic if there was like this, but for legal tech? And then we had a Google and there wasn't. So we're like, cool, let's do it. And then from there, we kind of started pulling things together. And last year's vacation scheme was a mad rush and probably the time it's felt most like a startup, trying to get everything ready and put together in about 6 weeks. And we initially were thinking, wouldn't it be great if we had like 100 people come to this? You know, we can like talk to people and help change their outlook on things. And then in the end, more than 350 people came along from all around the world and were like, oh, wow, okay, cool. People really like this. There might be something here. And then so we ran our second one just a few weeks ago, and we had more than 700 registrations from more than 54 countries around the world. So it just ballooned from last year, and we're like, okay, we're really onto something. We think we've got a sort of nice niche here, and people seem to be getting a lot of value out of this. So that's kind of our main flagship event that we do each year. And then the other initiative that we've got going as well, which we just announced at the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme a few weeks ago, is the Law School 2.0 course. The course is going to be an on-demand course, but we're also going to have cohorts if you want to do it with a class of individuals and chat to the people who are learning at the same time as you. The course is kind of taking the main mindset we try and teach for the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme of identifying problems, coming up with solutions, and figuring out how to get those solutions adopted. It will take that mindset and it adds some more things around sort of background, the legal industry, and also skills for future lawyers. And that course is launching sometime 2023 and is being supported by both iManage and Barbary. So yeah, definitely head to the website to check out that and get some more information.
Yeah, very exciting. Yeah,
exciting times. We'll be announcing more details over the coming weeks and months.
Very exciting times ahead. Sounds really, really cool. And as we just already said, the fact that you got to this point, this is really crazy. Really, really cool. And maybe, Amy, can you tell us more about, or for anyone who doesn't actually know exactly what the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme is or who hasn't attended the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme, what can you expect when you attend the vacation scheme? What kind of activities are going on? What are the experiences that people have taken from it?
Yeah, of course. So the vacation scheme is run, the large part of it where we get most attendees is the first 3 days. So that's what we call kind of the skills days or the more practical lectures and workshops. That's where they take place. So the first day is our problem framing day. So that's where we look at taking a problem in a legal workspace and how do you actually break down this problem? Because a lot of people in law, when they're looking for a solution, will dive headfirst into a solution because they just saw a snazzy ad on LinkedIn and they're like, let's buy that. But then they realize we didn't actually have that problem and now we're not using this tech tool. So what we do on that first day is run a series of lectures, more interactive sessions, where you can hear from a variety of different lecturers across in-house legal teams, law firms, legal techs, consultancies, about their experience with problem framing and how they approach that. We also, over the course of each of the 3 days, have expo booths where you can interact with our sponsors directly. So this year that included Mish Kondurea to hear from their early careers team. We had Betty Blocks, so you could chat to an actual legal tech and hear about what they do. We had Barbary in attendance as well, so you could hear about their courses. Then we had Caveat, who was speaking about their tech tool. And we also had Just Access. Again, another legal tech. So it was a great chance to actually meet a variety of different people and hear about how tech is used there. And then we also had some one-on-one networking, so you can meet other attendees. So the first day, problem framing. The second day, solution creation. So how do you actually design your solution? How are you taking into account things such as design thinking to make sure you're catering for the user? And ultimately solving the problem that you identified on the first day, not creating a solution that doesn't actually solve the problem. And the final day is solution adoption. So the talks and workshops on that day focus on how do you get people to use your solution and how do you actually get it adopted across your law firm or your in-house team, or if you're legal tech, how do you get your customers to actually roll it out successfully? The second part of the vacation scheme, and what's followed on quite nicely for people who've done the vacation scheme before, and eventually people who do the course, is having that chance to take what they've learned and put it into more practical experiences. And yep. So the second thing that we run is what we call our 48-hour idea sprint. So teams are given a problem statement. This year they were looking at how do you help people who are facing issues with their energy bills, given this cost of living crisis. How do you help them interact with the people working at these call centers in a more efficient way, potentially using a text transcription tool? So they took their problem statement, that was one of them. They break it down into their problem framing, they design a solution, and then they plan how do you actually get it adopted, and then they pitched it to a panel of judges at the end. So this is your chance to actually, you know, take what you learned and put it into practice rather than just kind of passively listening during the first 3 days. And this will be a great opportunity moving forward, and something that we want to run more often is that 48-hour idea sprint for attendees of both the course and the vacation scheme.
Very, very cool. And what have the, Amy just mentioned, there's a very big diversity of people that have joined the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme, from law students to lawyers and so on. What has their experience been with the Legal Tech Vacation Scheme? Have you heard anything following the previous one or the one before that?
I think it might be too early to kind of see in large part, because especially from last year's cohort, we've not had as direct communication with them. So if they have gone on to kind of work in legal tech or something, then we've not heard about that. And this year's one was just a few weeks ago. So if anyone did go from the vaccine a few weeks ago into a job in legal tech within like 3 weeks, that'd be amazing, like fantastic. But I think the programs that we've ran have been trying to teach people a mindset and set them up for what might be a career in legal tech or law and technology, or a career outside or inside the traditional legal path. So we will hopefully start to see Law School 2.0 alumni over the next sort of like 5 years or so entering these different paths. And even if we were just a sort of one drop in the bucket of their experience that's kind of brought them in that path forward, then we're really happy with
just
that.
Just to add on to that, the real impact as well, the additional impact that I'm looking forward to see as we move forward is those entering the traditional like trainee solicitor routes and seeing how they take what they've learned and put it into practice. Because speaking from working at my firm, I know trying to get engagement with fee earners can be really hard because they don't understand why they'd want to involve like a tech team or a data science team in the work that they're doing. So an interesting value add beyond people going down these alternative career routes, which is obviously a kind of, I wouldn't say an obvious takeaway from the vacation scheme, but one of the key takeaways from the vacation scheme is opening up your eyes to other career routes. But we found, and I think it was really interesting because the three of us didn't expect people beyond law students to attend. And then last year we're like, oh wow, we actually have a lot of lawyers. We have a lot of trainee solicitors, paralegals joining as well. And this year, I think it was around 33% were working professionals, so beyond just students. Don't hold me to that, though. That was a quick look at the statistics. But it's really interesting to us to see people who are working in innovation already coming to learn more about how they can possibly engage the lawyers of tomorrow. And that's the key thing that we're looking at, is how do you become the lawyer of tomorrow today? So not just law students, but how do you become the lawyer who engages with technology, who engages or looks at how to do things in an innovative way? So it'll be interesting to see moving forward how people in traditional legal practice approach their matters or their cases differently, and hopefully providing better service to their clients at the end of it.
Okay, well, you just mentioned, Amy, that obviously there was a wide diversity of people involved in or participating in the legal tech vacation scheme. But obviously it all starts with law school, and that's also where we started the podcast episode, like, what's wrong with law school? Is something missing? So I'm curious, looking from the perspective of law schools, what has their response been to the legal tech vacation scheme, or has there been any response from them so far?
Sure, of course. Actually, my expectation was that law schools would look at what we're doing and just reject us, because they would think, oh, why are these three people coming along and perhaps challenging what we've built over so many years? And I think it's also clear to say that we're not necessarily challenging what's happening in law schools from that perspective. I think there's also a place for learning academically about law and learning how to think about a lawyer. It's just, mm-hmm. I think it's hard to say that studying law prepares you to become a lawyer. And then it's really hard to calibrate the two when people go and study law with the aspiration to become a lawyer. It just doesn't feel like it really aligns with modern day legal practice. But even though we thought maybe universities wouldn't react so positively, we have had some universities reach out to us who want to potentially cooperate with us with creating content together. So we'll see where that goes in the future, but mm-hmm. we're really excited and happy to see that universities are taking the initiative to work directly with us rather than run away and be scared of potential competition in the field. So
yeah, and I just want to tag on back what Annabelle was saying as well, is when we are considering what we want to do over the next few years and the initiatives that we've got going forward, we are considering what are potential collaboration points with universities, because there's about 106 law schools in the UK, and we're looking at that sort of base of individuals and thinking mm-hmm. they are the lawyers of tomorrow. And you know, we want to try and reach as many people as possible and try and create a biggest impact in the industry as possible. So whenever we're considering what we want to do moving forward, we're always considering, you know, if a university is going to approach us and be like, hey, like what you're doing, is there a way we can get involved? Then we want to be able to be open to that and have that conversation and see how we can work together, instead of going, no, you should change law school. We're very much a case of, we recognize the value of law schools and the place they play today, and any way in which we can collaborate with them and drive change together, the more we want to open those conversations up.
Amy.
Yeah, the final thing I just say on that is, whether you know, law schools are looking at changing the curriculum through Law School 2.0, or looking at their own methods of adding in these kind of innovation-based mindsets, I think at the end of the day, our goal is that everyone going into legal practice or heading into a legal technology route or an innovation route, however they end up working in the wide world of law, they have these innovation mindsets, and they understand that to be able to work with these clients who more and more are getting involved in technology and have their own amazing innovation paths ahead of them, they need to have these skills. So again, whether the solution's Law School 2.0 or otherwise, it's really exciting for us to hear that more and more law schools are looking at changing their curriculum and helping to teach these mm-hmm. skills. And of course, we love when they approach us, as both Annabelle and Nathan mentioned.
I can imagine. And also, it's really two-way. It really goes two ways, because Nathan just mentioned, you know, it's not law school saying, no, we don't want to change. And it's not you saying you have to change. But for law schools themselves, it's impossible, I can imagine, for them to really fully change the curriculum and have all the space possible to teach and the theory and practice and everything. So I can imagine there's only a benefit in collaborating more in the legal industry or in changing legal education beyond beyond law schools and Law School 2.0, but also with law firms and startups and, well, I guess a whole ecosystem. Maybe heading to the wrap-up of the episode, I'm curious to know, for anyone who is interested in future events, what can they be expecting? Well, obviously, you mentioned the course, but anything they should be looking out for in addition to that, and where can they also find you guys?
So I can start. In terms of future events, absolutely, we're going to have the course. We're also hoping to run more of those 48-hour sprints, as I mentioned, to provide people who have come onto the course the chance to put what they've learned into practice. And what we ran last year, which we didn't talk about here, is we also did a in-person informal coffee and legal tech chat where we had people come down in London, because I think outside of the traditional networking, we've really enjoyed, we also had a summer party this past August. So we really enjoy seeing people come down and just kind of let their hair down and enjoy asking this kind of, I wouldn't say basic questions about legal tech, but the questions everyone wants to ask, but they're too scared to ask. So we really enjoy providing the venue for people to have these informal networking opportunities. So we're hoping to run more of those in the run up to Christmas and early next year as well. In terms of where they can find us, I'll probably hand that over to Annabelle, our marketing guru.
And I have to say, like, when we're actually thinking about our events, we do have quite a lot of fun finding the venues, because it's really nice starting from scratch in the way that we don't have to necessarily go to a bigger law firm and make it very glossy and have a dress code. We want to make it as approachable as possible. I'm a person who really likes wearing a suit. I like wearing a blazer, etc. But I don't think that really defines who you are as a lawyer. We don't want to create a place where people have to fit in a box that they don't really feel like they belong into. So we're really trying to find standout locations that are very unexpected for legal events. So we were really happy with the result from the event in the summer, because we really saw that law students were coming by themselves. And they were leaving with four other friends that they'd actually made at the event. Right. And perhaps felt that they'd actually met some other people who weren't on the standard or traditional career path in law. So we're really happy to be making those connections. The advice that I would really have for people who are looking to potentially move onto a less traditional legal career path is just to kind of be brave in your convictions. I think it's very easy for us to say that it's fine, go and explore legal tech, professional routes, etc. When I was studying law at the University of Warwick, I remember there was so much pressure to go and apply for vacation schemes and apply for training contracts, whereas actually those other alternative career routes just were not presented to us at all. And sometimes stepping off that path can feel very scary. And I only did because I was on Erasmus at the time, and I just thought I might as well explore it. So my main advice is just really be brave. If you don't think it's for you, just take the risk, try some work at a legal tech, try one of our practical programs with the Legal Tech 48 or one of these other legal design sprints, because you never know, you might prefer leaning more into the creativity side of legal and the different benefits that a legal tech career can provide you, or a career in working in the intersection between law and technology.
Thank you. That's really, really great advice. And I think that all three of you are probably one of the best examples that we can follow in that sense, whether it be in legal tech or in law with a more legal tech or innovative mindset. So I want to thank you all for joining me for the episode, and I think it was a really interesting discussion, and I hope also valuable for anyone listening, and to take on some of the advice points that you just gave. Thank you for having us. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast. Yeah.